Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. On your radio, in your iPod, on your Twitter, and your tweet. Where else are we? Oh, my God. I'm having a very rapid learning curve about Twitter. I went there the other day and logged on and, you know, opened an account and posted a quick is that how you say it, Kathy? Posted? Is that the right word? Posted a quick comment, a tweet, and immediately a woman responded and said, "Is this the real Mike Malloy? If you're the real Mike Malloy, prove it. Go on your program tonight and prove it." And this is like Friday, so I didn't. So the weekend I got one that said, "I knew you weren't the real Mike Malloy. Why don't you piss off?" You know. I'm sorry, man. I don't know how to do it. Kathy's going to teach me. It's all right. It's all right. Listen, I know how to run a calculator. You know, I know how to do stuff, but.
You've almost figured out how to turn off and on the speakerphone on your cell phone.
Almost. Almost. Anyway, MikeMalloy.com. If you haven't been there today, go. It's not quite completed. There are a couple of sections that when you click on them, you will see like internal instructions about this would be a good page to put up, but if you go to the main page, it's all there. It's all good. And there's also the part that we did get working right away is the part where you can subscribe to the podcasts. So please do that. Go to I remember when I got fired from Air America. There was a petition that went to petitiononline.com, and there were close to 20,000 people who signed that petition. So let's just get half of you to subscribe to the Malloy podcast and several other things that we're going to put up there for you. We're also going to have the Malloy's Uncensored mailbag. You know about that. If you don't, get the kids and the old people out of the room when you play that, because it's a video that is comprised of some of the mad ravings of people who think I'm the Antichrist, and they're usually incoherent right-wingers, but they're so much fun. Oh, my God, they're so much fun to read, even the ones that curse and damn my entire family. But that's right. What wouldn't expect less from right-wingers? Just wouldn't. So anyway, check it out tonight, MikeMalloy.com. Send me an email if you want to. Tell me what you like about it and what you don't like about it.
Yeah, and there's a link down there, I believe, to the new and improved, also over the weekend, Mike Malloy YouTube page. If you go to YouTube page,
what is
over 200?
Is that like television?
Stop it! There are over 200 videos there.
Yeah,
and I want to say a special thanks to Alva and Hernan and Joe, who worked like Trojans over the weekend to get a new and improved Mike Malloy YouTube page up with all kinds of video, current, old, new.
Hernan lives in Buenos Aires, right?
I believe he does.
Yeah, he does. And listens to the program via the internet or Sirius XM?
Podcasting, baby!
Podcasting, is that what
the
he
only
does?
Way to, he tweets it. No, I'm just kidding. And the most exciting factor that I think is going to be up and running either later tonight or tomorrow is going to be a live blog right on the front page, so you can come home and keep up with all your friends and chat, and we'll jump in there and we'll post things. It'll be right there on the front page, and I bet you every listener out there is going,
yeah,
is there a show tonight?
Yeah, we got a show coming, but you know, come on, we have to tell you, we have to do this business, we have to tell you about this, because you know, the thugs at Air America are not behind us anymore. The folks who made a valiant effort at Nova M and what was the other one? On second thought, I don't either. Are not there anymore. We're not with WLS or WSB, the two 50,000 watt blowtorches of the South and the Midwest. We are like on our own. So support the program, and it's not charity. Just go and subscribe. Subscribe to the podcast. Subscribe to the things that we'll have up there. And we'll be hammering this into your head over the next 6 or 7 months.
And it's going to be fun. Website's going to be fun.
Hey, you know, the truth, when you see it in print or you hear it from somebody else, it's spooky, right? Like, if you have a family where somebody in your family, this was true in my family, somebody in your family is really kind of the family weirdo. No matter what happens, this person in your family is the what are you laughing at? Is the real weirdo?
Well, I can't think of just one. It's hard for me to narrow it down.
That's true. You can always count on the weirdo in your family. He or she's the one who will fart when you're having Thanksgiving dinner, or you know, make some inappropriate comment, or go off on a rant about stuff that is so, you know, last century, and you just kind of put up with that person because, you know, they're a family member. With that, what are you going to do? And sometimes you just want to just slap them silly, but you put up with it because it's, you know, part of your family. And then somebody comes over to visit and notices this person and pulls you aside and says, "Hey, is your fill in the blank really crazy? Jesus, what a jackass!" And you look at the visitor and you go, "Well, you know." And the point is, it's okay if you if you keep it in the family, you know, or if you say, "God, my fill in the blank is a real jackass," but somebody else says, points out the truth, points out the truth, and says, "Hey, you know, you're fill in the blank is a real jackass." Well, you get, you know, your hackles go up and you say, wait a minute. Well, that happened over the weekend. Brazil's President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, last Thursday, okay, not technically the weekend, blamed the global economic crisis on, quote, white people with blue eyes, unquote, and said it was wrong that black and indigenous people should pay for white people's mistakes. And you know what? That's the truth! That's the absolute truth! I don't know how the Limbaugh family managed to put up with him, since he is a self-abusing drug addict, but I would imagine on his program the past couple of days, that has really enraged the right-wing psychopaths who so thoroughly infest radio, television, coast to coast, border to border, across the fruited plain. But there he was, Brazil President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, speaking the truth. The truth! And you know what was really cool about it? He spoke the truth at a joint press conference with a very white man, Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. Lula da Silva told reporters, quote, "This crisis was caused by the irrational behavior of white people with blue eyes, who before the crisis appeared to know everything and now demonstrate they know nothing," end quote. That's very true. But when I saw that quote, you know, I thought, yeah, wait a minute. Somebody hold a gun to your head, da Silva, and tell you you had to do what we said? And then I thought to myself, yeah, I guess we did, didn't we? Only we didn't call it guns. We called it economic sanctions. We called it the World Trade Organization. We called it the IMF. But, you know, bottom line was about the same. Didn't our economic policies, or the IMF's economic policies, bankrupt half of South America not that long ago, right? So when Lula da Silva says this, that white people with blue eyes are the folks who caused all these problems, you know, he's absolutely correct. Granted, the Japanese are not white people with blue eyes, but when they had their economic meltdown, you know, it was kind of contained. Do you remember that? During the 90s, it was contained on the island nation itself. But here we are, causing the entire planet to convulse as capitalism slowly dies. He said, Lula da Silva said, "I do not know any black or indigenous bankers, so I can only say it is wrong that this part of mankind, which is victimized more than any other, should pay for the crisis," end quote. Oh, and poor Gordon Brown standing there said, "I'm not going to attribute blame to any individuals." We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Before I use it, lose my cool. I'm wearing out. bang, bang, bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk.
Better stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
You knocks me out. Out off my feet.
It is 21 past the hour.
Bang, 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 bang.
Also today, I think it was today, New York's Attorney General, Andrew Cuomo, has pressured Chase Bank into ending what Cuomo said was an illegal $10 monthly fee imposed on thousands of credit card accounts last November. These people have absolutely no conscience, do they? Well, of course not. They're capitalists. The bank, Chase Bank, has also agreed to give refunds totaling about $4.5 million to about 184,000 customers. Cuomo had accused the bank of springing the fee on customers after first luring them in with promises of low interest rates. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. $10 monthly fee. Officials at parent company J.P. Morgan Chase did not immediately respond today to phone and email messages. Cuomo says the settlement will save Chase customers $22 million over the next 12 months. Unbelievable. As bad as things are, and as precarious a shape that the credit card companies are in, all it's going to take is just just one flash of awareness on a part of an awful lot of credit card customers that the balances that they have on their cards and the amount of interest they're being charged by the card companies, coupled with the late fees, coupled with the reduction in the amount of credit due that they can get their hands on, is going to say to them one thing: to hell with it. And they're going to toss the card in the trash. So in the meantime, the credit cards, of course, the card issuing agencies are deciding, well, let's try to rip off as much as we can here because we know that we're next to go down. I wonder if Barack Obama is going to bail us out. According to the Associated Press, young, tech-savvy, well-educated Indian and Chinese immigrants are packing it in. Where it concerns the United States, they're heading home. That's according to some research done at by Harvard. The researcher said, quote, the majority of people like it better back home. The U.S. isn't everything anymore. Oh, wow. The researcher estimates that that while 50,000 Indian and 50,000 Chinese immigrants returned home in the past 20 years, there will be 100,000 Indians and 100,000 Chinese immigrants leaving in the next five. That might be a good thing, wouldn't it? You know, go home and take care of your countries. India and China are going to be the twin engines of the global effort by China to turn this into the Chinese century. Of course, the Indians may be thinking about doing that too. And it's time for the United States to draw back. We had our century. It was the 20th. The 21st belongs to other people. So if you folks, you highly trained and highly paid tech people, will just please go home. Really, no offense. We liked having you here. Love the food. Go home. And our research centers and universities can once again start turning out people who are involved in pure research, because they will know that they won't be in competition with people on special visas in this country from India and or China, and that therefore they will be able to get a well-paying job, these American graduates, and we can once again begin to possibly maybe assert ourselves where it concerns technology and engineering and medicine and so on and so forth. You know, not that we're slouches in that business right now, but you get my drift. As you know, the group of 20 is meeting. Is it this week? Is it this week in where are they? They're meeting in Germany. I think they're meeting in Germany. No, they're meeting in London. That's right. Demonstrations are starting to occur all over Europe. The General Secretary of the Trades Union Council in the UK told protesters in Hyde Park, London, that the G20 needed to, quote, take actions to lay the foundation for a better world, end quote. He went on to say, quote, if we can generate fabulous wealth, then surely we can learn how to distribute that wealth more fairly. If we can unleash a technological revolution, then surely we can ensure that everyone on this planet gets the food, shelter, and health care they need, end quote. There were protests in Germany, including Berlin and Frankfurt, which is the country's banking capital, in Vienna, Austria. Demonstrators gathered brandishing paper piggy banks, balloons, and signs in Paris, in London. What's going on here? What kind of demonstrations we have in here? Anybody? No? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
No more Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Obama's announcement today about and the news over the weekend that the head of General Motors had been relieved of his command. Certainly got everybody all a Twitter, so to speak, didn't it? I mean, my goodness, every single news talking head that I saw today on the cable channels, not on the network news, but on the cable channels, all started pretty much the same way, and that was that Barack Obama had fired the head of General Motors. Oh, my God. The way things are spun, it's just, it's mind-boggling. Barack Obama fired the head of General Motors. Eek! Marxism! Marxism! Which is kind of what I wrote about on the blog today. But anyway, from Prairie 2, he has a question. Is Obama stupid, or is he lying to us? The president said with a straight face that we don't need all those jobs back that have been outsourced because they are low-paying jobs. Any bright fifth grader and even the occasional Republican can figure out that we can't run the economy on just the jobs created by installing solar panels. He seems to think that we will make the solar panels here, but we aren't making them here now, so what makes him think that will change? Why is the president spouting Republican talking points? The Republicans are perfectly comfortable with us being a third world country. Does Obama think that the mushrooming Hoovervilles won't be called Obama slums when they become permanent fixtures? Has he become a flat earther willing to sacrifice a certain percentage of Americans for the good of all, especially the rich? Obama must have a more realistic view of the future than the one he has revealed so far. Perhaps he thinks we can't handle the truth. We can't keep getting our manufactured goods from China. We've only been paying for half of it, and China's getting tired of that. They're going to cut up our credit card. If the news reports can be believed, China has already reduced its dollar holdings dramatically, with only about half of its foreign currency reserves now in dollars. We don't have anything more to sell China. In fact, they're moving aggressively to acquire everything we sell to them somewhere else. Brazil can grow twice as many soybeans per acre with less input costs, and so on. Exporting debt isn't going to work. Paying with dollars that they can't spend anywhere isn't going to work. China has come right out and said they aren't going to fall for that one anymore. Obama may not be ready yet to explain the painful details of undoing 30 years of Republican economic destruction. He is planning a garden at the White House. Of course, he has a 10-foot fence and armed guards to keep the starving masses from stealing his vegetables. Time to start scoping out the neighborhood with an eye toward establishing a defensive perimeter around any tillable land. And when the kids are bored, send them down to the soccer field to hoe the potatoes. From Prairie 2. And by the way, you can respond to Prairie 2 now by going to his website, prairie2.com. The greatest investigative reporter left in the United States, Seymour Hersh, is at it again at the New Yorker magazine. In the context of a larger article, he mentions the fact that Dick Cheney, while he was still a sitting vice president, and I believe after the election in this country had been decided and Barack Obama either had been elected president, not sworn in yet, but elected president, or it was Barack Obama who had just gotten the Democratic nomination. I think it was the former. I think he'd been sworn in, or not sworn in, but elected president by the votes. And Cheney apparently was in Israel, or at least talking to the Israeli government, telling them that Barack Obama was pro-Palestinian, that Barack Obama was a threat to Israel, that Barack Obama was not in the major leagues, that Barack Obama was going to destroy the country and take Israel down with it, more or less. He didn't say it exactly like that, but that was the implication. Somebody needs to explain to Dick Cheney that it's time for him to shut up. Seriously. Shut up. This is the guy who did more to destroy this country than World War II. He did more to destroy the country than the War of 1812. This man is a threat to every single citizen of the United States. Why he is still loose? Well, the answer to that is because the Democrats are cowards. Well, thank God for the Spanish. The same judge who issued the arrest warrants for another murderous, sick son of a bitch, Augusto Pinochet, is putting together, so reports say, arrest warrants for six of the people involved in these war crimes. Dick Cheney hasn't been mentioned yet, nor has George W. Bush. But one can hope. If we are not capable of doing that in this country, these are our war criminals. They should be brought to trial by us. They should be indicted, tried, and if so, convicted and put in prison. But if the Spanish courts have to do it, so be it. We will certainly watch that one with interest, right? Now, the other thing today in the Washington Post, when it talks about when CIA officials subjected their first high-value captive, the unlucky Abu Zubaydah, to waterboarding and other torture methods, CIA officials were convinced that they had in their custody an al-Qaeda leader who knew all the details of operations yet to be unleashed. As a matter of fact, this is what the Bush crime family kept telling us. And it turns out now the CIA officials were facing increasing pressure from the White House to torture this poor bastard until he spilled the beans. Now, the methods that they used succeeded in breaking him. It would break anybody. It would break you. It would break me. Look what it did to Christopher Hitchens. How long did he last? 17 seconds. And the stories he told of al-Qaeda terrorism plots sent the FBI and the CIA scurrying around the globe, chasing leads that were nothing. These are the stories that Dick Cheney and the rest of Josh Bolton and the rest of these lying bastards have been putting out there in the media now, and prior to their being removed from office, that All the great intelligence that we got through our interrogation methods resulted in the thwarting of numerous plots that would have destroyed American lives, American property, possibly, probably, right on our own soil. Turns out that none of that is true. Of course, you knew that when it was going on, as did I. This is about the same time that, remember the color-coded terrorist alerts? Whatever happened to those? What were they? Green, yellow, orange, red, purple, what? I don't know.
All I know is, like, we were always yellow or orange. It just
always
perpetual.
They were coming. They're going to L.A. Airport. They're coming in from New Orleans. They're coming over here. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. In the end, not a single significant plot was foiled as a result of Zubaydah's torture, because there were none. They were all just anything that he could say, he said. The Post says nearly all the leads attained through the harsh measures quickly evaporated, while most of the useful information from Abu Zubaydah, not cities that were going to be nuked, but names of Al-Qaeda members and associates, that information was obtained before Cheney ordered him tortured. Once the torture began, it all stopped. Dick Cheney is a sick son of a bitch. Somebody ought to leash him. I don't know, take him someplace. I watched the film from the early 70s last night, The Paralex View. Did you ever see that? Huh? I'm suggesting that you get it and look at it again. Dick Cheney, with his ring of assassins, his sick mind, his lust for torture, to seeing other people in agony. Why is that? Is it because that his own life has been just a series of heart attacks and cowardice? Is that it? Is that why this man has turned out to be, or always was, such a sick, vampiric bastard? Oh, my God. And you know what is really vile to me, even worse than, well, not worse, but on a par with Cheney's behavior, is to watch when I see clips, video clips, of Cheney now and then addressing some gathering of right-wing bobbleheads, and they cheer him. They cheer him when he comes out on stage. A man who did more to destroy this country than anyone practically in the history of this republic, and he is cheered. It's astonishing.
A traveler on an airline had his name on a secret list. He was taking away with his laptop, and as he left, he called out to me. I mean, me and Guantanamo, I heard the girls are sweeter there. Have a water board to share. Meet me in Guantanamo, where does the mess help get around? Meet me, my friend, in Guantanamo. Meet me, my friend, in Guantanamo.
Conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 9 before the hour. You know, further evidence is coming out now. I how sick does a person have to be, let me rephrase it, how much evidence do we need that a person is not just a megalomaniac, but paranoid, certainly, delusional, certainly, possibly schizophrenic, but don't want to go too far here. And he holds the highest office in the land in the Bush crime family's instance. That was vice president. All the evidence points to the fact that for the past 8 years, this country's been run by a man who was functionally insane, absolutely insane. There must have been some sort of an agreement, as there was towards the latter days of Nixon, some sort of an agreement among the upper echelons of the military that no matter how valid the order seemed that would come from Cheney or Bush to launch the nukes, they were not going to do it because they understood that Cheney was insane and Bush was a puppet. I wonder, don't you? It's astonishing. Now, the Washington Post reveals that the torture ordered by Cheney didn't work. It especially didn't work on Abu Zubaydah, the first high-value captive that the Bush crime family managed to snag. Not only did the information that he gave turn out to be nothing because he'd been tortured, the real information, which was names of operatives in the Al-Qaeda organization, that came through traditional methods of interrogation, working with your prisoner, convincing him or her that correct, truthful answers to the questions would be not just redeeming, but might save an awful lot of hell. But no, not for Cheney. Cheney wanted to see the videotapes. Cheney wanted to see the viciousness. Cheney wanted to see the pain inflicted, and he got to see that. However, the people being tortured gave him garbage. Abu Zubaydah, it turns out, was not even an official member of Al-Qaeda. This is in today's Washington Post. According to what emerges from court documents and interviews with current and former intelligence, law enforcement, and military sources, Abu Zubaydah was not even a member of Al-Qaeda. Rather, he was a fixer. A fixer. A fixer! Like, who is the guy in Pulp Fiction who was the fixer after the boys blew what's-his-name's head off? Who was that guy?
I love that movie too, man.
Who came around and cleaned up?
I think they called him the cleaner.
The cleaner cleaned up the inside of the car and.
Or the plumber. Or something like that.
The wolf. What was his name?
The wolf.
Who was the actor?
The guy from the piano.
Yeah, who's? That's what Cheney.
Yeah, he's got a German name.
That's what Cheney was. I mean, that's well, Cheney was that. No, Cheney was a destroyer. That's what Abu Zubaydah was. He was a fixer for radical Muslim ideologues. And he ended up working directly with Al-Qaeda only after September 11th. And you want to know why? Because we stood ready to invade his country, Afghanistan. Now, I don't know if someone needs to be especially learned to figure this out. But when 19 people come to your country, and through a series of hijackings and bombings, they managed to kill over 3,000 people inside your country, the vast majority of whom are American citizens. And you find out that 15 of these 19 killers were from Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia. What do you do? When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, did we start bombing France? Did we declare war on Zaire? Well, there wasn't any back then, Mike. Come on. All right, Brazil.
Well, you bring in the fixer. You bring in...
You bring in...
Harvey Keitel.
Harvey Keitel. Thank you. That was his name. So Abu Zubaydah, this poor Afghan goat herder who wound up being a fixer, who wound up going to his home country, Afghanistan, because he figured, hey, the white devils are going to come and invade. and I'm going to defend the holy sites of Islam, none of which, of course, exist in Afghanistan. But he was just another religious freak, apparently. That's why he was there. He got scooped up. You know, he managed to make car connections. It was like this guy, Abu Zubaydah, probably had a Hertz rent-a-car credit card and set up the rental deals for the real Al-Qaeda people. He wasn't. Abu Zubaydah's case, the New York Washington Post says, presents the Obama administration with one of its most difficult decisions as it reviews the files of the 241 detainees still held at Guantanamo. Abu Zubaydah, the nom de guerre of the man born Zain al-Abidin Muhammad Hussein, was never charged in a military commission in Guantanamo, but some U.S. officials are pushing to have him charged now with conspiracy. Oh, and excuse me, he is not Afghan, he is Palestinian. Somebody should put a leash and a muzzle on Dick Cheney, sit him down someplace in a room with barred windows, and tell him, Dick, this is where you're going to spend the rest of your life. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget, go to MikeMalloy.com. Website is not completely finished yet, but it's up and running, and there's lots of information there in case you want to become a podcast subscriber. We hope you will. Also, it's a little bit difficult to find the free live stream. We'll have that corrected probably by tomorrow. It's there. You just have to hunt around a little bit. Okay? Okay. Do you remember all the talk, sticking with the Afghanistan for a couple of minutes here, because we are making a huge investment in blood and bodies in Afghanistan thanks to President Barack Obama. Yes, we are. We are sending another 20-plus thousand U.S. troops to Afghanistan to, I swear to God, I don't know exactly why we're going there, what the point is, but going there we surely are. NATO, I think, our North Atlantic Treaty Organization partners, are starting to pull out. They understand Afghanistan apparently to a far greater degree and much more coherently than we in this country. Certainly, most Americans couldn't find Afghanistan on a map if you eliminated half the planet. But you would think that our leaders in this country, especially our exalted Barack Obama, would understand that the Afghan word, how does that go, Kathy? The Afghan word for morass is Vietnam, or the Vietnamese word for morass is Afghanistan, something like that. You get the point. Harman Karzai, our puppet, the guy who used to be a lobbyist for Unocal Oil Company out of California. Harman Karzai was one of the people in Houston back in 1998 or 1999 who sat down with Bush crime family members and oil company executives. which are pretty much the same, and entertained the leaders of the Taliban, who had been invited to Houston, Texas, to discuss a pipeline across that country. The Taliban said no, they didn't want any part of it, and they were told that this would result in their country being utterly and absolutely destroyed. I'm not sure how they responded, but I think it probably had something to do with telling the people at the meeting to kiss their togaed asses or turbaned asses or robed asses or whatever it was, because they have been there before, threatened by huge, well-armed imperial powers who eventually realized that Afghanistan was just not a place that they wanted to continue to maintain garrisons and left. So Hamid Karzai sat in on all of that. And when the time came, after the government of Afghanistan was overthrown by us, Hamid Karzai was installed as the democratically elected leader of that country. The reports are that Afghanistan has become one of the most corrupt countries on earth, right up there with Russia now, close to the Bush crime family when they were in power. But Hamid Karzai is now being accused of trying to win votes in this upcoming Afghanistan presidential election by backing a law that the UN, the authority, or the legal officials of the UN says the law legalizes rape within marriage. It bans women, wives, from stepping outside their homes without their husband's permission. Now, keep in mind what George W. Bush said, that women in Afghanistan were now free to do, oh, anything, from being teachers to wearing white shoes before April 1st to walking around in miniskirts if they wanted to. It was all so lovely. No. That's the information that Cheney fed into Bush's addled brain so that he could in turn spoon-feed it to the brain-dead American public about how well things were going in Afghanistan. Of course, we didn't care. We didn't pay attention. We were too busy here at home buying things on borrowed money and eating up the equity in our houses and pretending like everything is wonderful. Jesus Christ, spend, spend, spend. In the meantime, in Afghanistan, things were slowly going to hell. When Hamid Karzai was made president, the corruption really took off. And now, Hamid Karzai has an election that he has called for the summer. The Constitution called for it to be, I think, in the fall, but Karzai doesn't want to wait. He signed into law earlier this month, despite condemnation by human rights activists, a law that flouts that country's equal rights provisions. The final document has not been published yet, but the law is believed to contain articles that rule women cannot leave the house without their husband's permission, that they can only seek work, education, or visit the doctor with their husband's permission, and that they cannot refuse their husband sex. A briefing document prepared by the UN Development Fund for Women also warns that the law grants custody of children to fathers and grandfathers only. A senator who is a member of the upper house of the Afghan parliament, a woman, said the law was, quote, worse than during the Taliban. Anyone who spoke out was accused of being against Islam, end quote. In other words, anyone who spoke out while this law was being debated in the Afghan Senate was accused of being against Islam. Now, the Ministry of Justice in that country says the bill was signed by Karzai this month. Human rights activists can't seem to get a copy of it. The Justice Ministry in Afghanistan said the law would not be published until various, quote, technical problems, end quote, have been ironed out. Now, what is Karzai doing? Well, he's become so unpopular at home that this presidential election is expected to be extremely closely fought. And one of the blocks that he is looking to win over is the Hazara minority in that country. It's regarded as the most important bloc of swing voters in the election. They are the ones who demanded the new law. They are religious fundamentalist crazies. An MP, Ustad Mohammad Akhbari, an MP and the leader of the Hazara political party, said the president had supported the law in order to curry favor among his people, but he said the law actually protected women's rights. He said, quote, men and women have equal rights under Islam, but there are differences in the way men and women are created. Men are stronger and women are weaker. Even in the West, you do not see women working as firefighters. Yes, you do. Even smoke jumpers, you dumbass. But what would you know? You're a religious fanatic. You are a jerk. You are a freak. And eventually your people are going to rise up and cut off your head. You do understand that, right? This guy said the law gave women the right to refuse sexual intercourse with their husbands if the woman was unwell or had another reasonable, quote, excuse, end quote, excuse. And he said a woman would not be obliged to remain in her house, you know, if an emergency forced her to leave without permission. You know, like if the goddamn place was on fire and hubby isn't home, the woman can leave. But if she leaves and the house is not on fire, then she will be flogged, flayed, beaten, maybe executed, because Islam demands it! Just like Christianity demands certain things. Now, the international community has so far shied away from publicly questioning such a, quote, politically sensitive issue, end quote.
Well, what do you do if your husband wants to have sex?
And the house is all the house is on fire. I figured you were going to say that. I don't know, Kathy. It probably raises conflicting points in Sharia law or this crazy Islamic law stuff that is almost as crazy as Christian stuff. I don't know. If he wants to get laid while the house is burning down, good question. We will think about this during the break.
Some fresh ice cubes. I'm just sitting here waiting for you.
They go together like a horse and carriage. This I'll tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other. Love and marriage.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
Yeah, I don't like religious extremists of any stripe. They turn my stomach. They are so anti-life. They're anti-earth. They're anti-everything. The only thing that exists for these people is some made-up place after they all die and their bodies rot. They have this nirvana, heaven. No, that was a rock group. Heaven, paradise, whatever it is, to go spend all eternity. And as a result of that belief, their lives here on earth must be just absolutely miserable. And if not so, then it's their goal to make everyone else's life as miserable as possible. So these crazy religious fanatics in Afghanistan who are now determining after a brief interlude, perhaps, and I don't believe the interlude really occurred to any noticeable degree. That was all in George Bush's addled brain. After a brief interlude of maybe being able once again for 7 and 8 year old little girls to go get an education, or 25 or 30 or 40-year-old women who had been educated out of the country and made the hideous mistake of returning, trying to practice medicine, and all these girls and women being beaten, flayed, burned alive. Do you know how many children are burned alive, girl children are burned alive in schools around Afghanistan? how many of these mud and rock huts where the windows are sealed up while the kids are in there, and the buildings are doused with flammable materials, and the children are roasted alive because their parents had the absolute disrespect toward Allah to send them to school. This is Hamid Karzai. This is Afghanistan. This is the Taliban. This is, once again, a result of the chaos in that country, 8 years of Bush policy. Now, one could make an argument, I'm not going to make it, but one could make an argument that Obama's policy is going to focus on the hearts and minds, as well as the military destruction of the Taliban. Focusing on the hearts and minds of the people of Afghanistan who are not Taliban. Where have we heard that before? Well, for some of you, you know what the hell I'm talking about. For people over the age of 45, people over the age of 50, you know what this is. This is Vietnam all over again. Here we go. And remember, the good intentions, oh yeah, we're going to win their hearts and minds, resulted in My Lies, resulted in Agent Orange, resulted in free fire zones, right? So here we go again. Now, I realize that Barack Obama is not old enough to have remembered the horrors of Vietnam, that conflict, but wouldn't you think there would be people around him who would say, don't do this, Mr. President. Don't do it. But I digress. As far as the women of Afghanistan are concerned, Tom in Minneapolis says, check out this website. RAWA.org, that stands for Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan, RAWA.org, RAWA.org. Now, as far as, the warrants that may arise as a result of this investigation in Spain into six Americans who should be charged with war crimes in much the same way the Nazi High Command was charged with war crimes at Nuremberg. They're still lacking, of course, Bush and Cheney, but, you have to begin somewhere. Sheila writes, you mentioned the big story on the Internet and in foreign news media about the Spanish court going to charge six former Bush officials for war crimes. What isn't the big story is that the Spanish court is not going to even probe the war crimes of Israel. In fact, Spanish Foreign Minister Miguel Moratinos sent Israel's Zipi Livni, or told Israel's Zipi Livni, that Spain is going to amend legislation that allows a war crimes investigation against senior Israeli officials. In other words, they're going to change the legislation so it does not allow war crimes investigations against senior Israeli officials. What the hell is going on here? What the hell is going on here? Sheila goes on, this hullabaloo over investigating U.S. officials, who certainly deserve it, takes the attention away from what Israel is doing. And in the end, we all know the investigation against the Bush officials will go nowhere. So why bother with attempting to hold Israel's criminals to account? Mission accomplished. Now, she closes with Spanish. I'm not sure what this first one is. No crea todo lo que leen de España. But the last part I know, aquí viene Lucy con el fútbol. Here comes Lucy again with the football. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Thank you.
blowing up America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
Aquí viene Luce con el fútbol. Here comes Lucy again with the football. One more example of the insanity of certain factions of the leadership of Islam, mostly Arab leaders. They, as reported by the Times today, Arab leaders might be divided over which Palestinian faction to support, what to do about Iran's rising influence. But they have found one cause they can rally around, and that's protecting the psychopathic president of Sudan from charges that he orchestrated the rape, killing, and widespread pillaging of Darfur. They, Arab leaders are have gathered for their annual summit meeting in Doha, the capital city of Qatar. They had no trouble agreeing to, as the Times puts it, an effusive embrace of Omar Hassan al-Bashir, the president of Sudan, who was indicted by the International Criminal Court earlier this month for war crimes and crimes against humanity. So obviously, it's not just blue-eyed white people who are sick, pathological sons of bitches. Also, brown-eyed, dark-skinned people can be sick, pathological, murderous sons of bitches just as easily. Eh? The emir of Qatar, where we have a huge military base now, I believe, greeted President Bashir at the airport with a red carpet treatment, a warm embrace, and a kiss. Even before the meeting began, the General Secretary of the Arab League said that the member states would, quote, continue our efforts to halt the implementation of the warrant, end quote, the warrant issued by the International Criminal Court against this sick son of a bitch for crimes against humanity and war crimes. Now, I can understand why Arab leaders have closed ranks around this fellow head of state as a way of telling the West to, you know, kiss its collective rear ends. But this is a mass killer, probably even to a greater degree, this is arguable, than Dick Cheney. Maybe not quite as bad as Dick Cheney, but in the same ballpark. Resolution drafted by foreign ministers of these Arab nations said, quote, the leaders, that would be them, reject attempts to politicize the principles of international justice and using them to undermine the sovereignty, unity, and stability of Sudan. Whew. My God. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon also attended the conference, and he said that, according to the Times, he sharply criticized Mr. Bashir for expelling aid agencies. Remember that? In response to the court's call for his arrest, this filthy subhuman said, "Oh, you're talking about arresting me? Here, let's get the aid agencies out. Let these non-Muslim people rot. I don't care." Let me tell you something. According to his own holy book, his ass is doomed. There's not going to be 70 virgins waiting for him. There's going to be 7 demons, and they are going to spend 1,000,000 years picking bits of flesh off of his body, slowly but surely killing him in the most exquisite way imaginable in this crazed religion. All religions are crazed, especially, apparently, Christianity, Islam, a close second, those two are tied, then comes Hinduism, and then comes Judaism. I don't know where Shintoism or Confucianism or the rest of it falls on the scale of madness, but we do know that these religions, these people of the book, all seem to be insane. All of them seem to be insane. This massive cancer that is the so-called Middle Eastern problem, the Israeli-Palestinian issue, caused because a group of people insist that some sky spook gave them a lease on the land thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years ago. So because of that, there has to be slaughter. And the Muslim freaks who have decided that anyone who is not of their faith deserves to die. And the Christian madmen who own the atomic bomb and the hydrogen bomb and just waiting for somebody to make them bring about the rapture, so to speak. I'm sorry. I get carried away with this stuff. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. You would think that nations would not welcome, the heads of state of various nations, in this case Arab nations, would not welcome, embrace a piece of human waste like this Bashir, Omar Hassan al-Bashir, the president of Sudan. It's ugly. Okay. Brazil, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Sudan. We're finished with the international news for this evening. Obama today announced what amounts to a do-or-die ultimatum for the automobile industry today, right? And I would imagine that the right-wingers, I have not listened to right-wing talk radio in a very, very long time and won't because I, you know, I value my sanity. But I'm sure that they're going nuts with, well, here it is, you know, Marxism, socialism. He fired the head of General Motors, which he did not. But Obama came up with I think is a pretty good idea. And that is, he is kind of insisting if they want any more money. I mean, you know, the bottom line is, if these people can operate without federal money, well, go ahead. Nobody, you know, nobody's telling you, you know, just continue to, you know, pick your nose and watch as foreign automakers steal every last car buyer in America. Go ahead. Go ahead, Ford and Chrysler and GM, and, you know. But if you're going to go to the government and ask for money, see, backed by no longer loans from China because they ain't playing anymore. So it's backed by our children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren's future. If that's what you're coming for. If you're coming for a holdout, then, or a handout, then how dare anybody suggest that Barack Obama is nationalizing or the auto industry or imposing state planning on this failed industry? I believe the auto industry should be saved too. You're damn right. I grew up in the auto industry. But because of their decisions, because of their leadership, because of what they saw as the kinds of cars they were going to jam down the throats of America, they are now dying. So they come to us for help. Okay, you can have help. Obama said today that he would expect that there would be a new vision. he would expect a process where the people who are in charge can do the right thing, make cars that Americans want to buy, run the company the way a company should be run, restructure the auto industry, do it right so that you don't have to come to the federal government in all your arrogance demanding that if you don't get billions, you know, you're another one that's too big to fail. Well, they are. What do we still make in this country? We can't let the auto industry fail. So I think it's a good idea to bail them out. And, I mean, okay, you want to let them fail? you realize how many more people will be unemployed? It could be done. We can save them. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Obama said the auto industry has to survive because, quote, it is like no other, an emblem of the American spirit, end quote. He also said both GM and Chrysler failed to come up with plans adequate to justify the billions more in government help that they're requesting. And then he said, quote, and so today I'm announcing that my administration will offer GM and Chrysler a limited period of time to work with creditors, unions, and other stakeholders to fundamentally restructure in a way that would justify an investment of additional tax dollars, a period during which they must produce plans that would give the American people confidence and their long-term prospects for success, end quote. Now, any auto industry executive doesn't like that certainly doesn't have to take the money, right?
Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
Ten before the hour. So Obama brought the hammer down, so to speak, on the auto industry, only because they showed up hat in hand asking for money. Which, when you stop to think about it, really takes a lot of cojones, doesn't it? Huh? It really does. This is part of what he said, what Obama said. We cannot and must not, and we will not, let our auto industry simply vanish. This industry is like no other. It's an emblem of the American spirit, a once and future symbol of America's success. It's what helped build the middle class and sustained it throughout the 20th century. It's a source of deep pride for the generations of American workers whose hard work and imagination led to some of the finest cars the world has ever known. It's a pillar of our economy that has held up the dreams of millions of our people, and we cannot continue to excuse poor decisions. We cannot make the survival of our auto industry dependent on an unending flow of taxpayer dollars. These companies and this industry must ultimately stand on their own, not as wards of the state. Now, I can't think of anything that is more explicit or clearer than what Obama is saying in that paragraph and what he said during his entire speech. But sure enough, the right-wingers went just absolutely nuts, nuttier than they are most of the time or all the time. Anyway, with this is Marxism, this is social the socialist takeover of the United States. See, we warned you about Barack Obama, on and on and on. Don't these people ever give up? There are other areas in which one could challenge Barack Obama's decisions, but I don't think this is one of them. I don't think, you know, Clinton was called a Marxist too, wasn't he? He was going to bring socialism to the United States. He was going to destroy the rich people. He was going to, you know, and the greatest period of prosperity, whether it was real or not real, you know, that's another thing. Anyway, the greatest period of prosperity ever occurred under Bill Clinton. A lot of people say, well, that was all false, all fake. Hello. Everything that the U.S. has done for the past 30 years regarding our economy has been fake. I mean, come on. Everything. Tell me something that's been real. My God. You know, we allowed these speculators to engineer this housing bubble so we could all think that we had money when our average income is lower now than it's lower now than it was in the late 70s when you factor in inflation. So we allowed the Bernie Madoffs of the world in the housing industry to make it look like, oh, I've got a $150,000 house. It's now worth $700,000. Son of a bitch, give me some money. And everybody went crazy with that, right? But say what you will. Bill Clinton, where was I? The Bill Clinton administration brought about the largest run-up of prosperity this country has ever seen. Now, he did put into place triggers that when pulled resulted in the whole damn thing coming down, and Bush, being the little jackass that he was, the first thing he did when he got in office is pulled the triggers. Crash! So here we are. Obama went on and said, now what we're asking for is difficult. It'll require hard choices by companies. It'll require unions and workers who have already made extraordinarily painful concessions to do more. Sure. Bring it down on the workers and the unions, right? It'll require creditors who recognize that they can't hold out for the prospect of endless government bailouts. Okay, although I think you've proven just the opposite today, Mr. President. It will require efforts from a whole host of other stakeholders, including dealers and suppliers. Only then can we ask American taxpayers who have already put up so much of their hard-earned money to once more invest in a revitalized auto industry. I don't know. I just get this sick feeling in the pit of my stomach that most Americans who are not involved in the auto industry directly look at this as what the right-wing talk show hosts want them to look at it as, a bailout of certain people while the rest of the country goes to hell. And that's, you know, that really is a shame. I still maintain that Barack Obama is, he's got a mile to go to save this economy, and he's gone maybe, 100 yards? Because what has to be done here is the nationalization of 5 or 6 key industries. We have got to have democratic socialism. We have to. Why don't the thinkers and the economists, with the possible exception of 3 or 4 of them, prevail upon Barack Obama and his advisors to realize that capitalism really has run its course? I mean, everybody can say, well, it was a great run. Of course, it wasn't for everybody. It was for an elite few, and it did help develop a middle class. But look what it was built upon. Look what's happened. So why is Barack Obama continuing to try to reanimate a corpse? Ultimately, it's not going to happen, is it? Is it? I don't think so. We are going to open up the phone lines and take your calls when we come back. So do join us. The number here is 877-99-MALLOY or 877-996-2556. Stay with us. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. We certainly invite you to go to the new MikeMolloy.com website and check it out. We are not completely finished with the building yet, our webmaster, but it's getting close. One section that is up and running, though, is the section where you can subscribe and become a supporter of the program. Subscribe to the podcasts that are available on a daily basis. So if you are so inclined, we certainly would like to have you subscribe and in that way support the program. The costs are considerably lower than what they were at Nova M. And that should make a difference. We certainly realize that we are in some hard economic times here. But it boils down to about 25 cents a program is what the podcast cost is, figured on a yearly basis. So, you know, a lot of people said this is a two-bit show. Well, here's a chance to prove it. You know what I'm saying?
I was going to say, it's like 8 cents an hour. Think about where can you get entertainment like that? I pay more than that. You know how much
8 cents an hour? That's about what is
and
that?
And you get a sham wow. Now, do you know how much we pay for like cable or Dish or Direct or whatever it is we have at the moment because we keep changing to get better deals?
I don't know what it is.
A lot more than 8 cents an hour.
It's like when I was a kid, we used to move when the rent was due around here. Now, whenever the cable bill comes due, we switch companies. What kind of a deal are you going to make us, huh? But we digress. It's about 9 past the hour. Let's do some phone calls here on the Molloy program. Starting with Ben, who's calling from St. Louis, listening on XM. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Mike. What's going on, bud?
You are.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, where to start with you? A while ago, you said that the right wingers were obsessed with saying that we're moving towards socialism and all this.
Right.
And then a couple of minutes later, you say, when will we accept that we need socialism?
Yeah, what's the problem? I'm a talk show host. The president of the United States is a capitalist. What's your problem?
He's not a capitalist.
How do you define a capitalist?
A capitalist is someone who does not create laws that hamper and hurt organizations and also businesses.
How does, first of all, the President of the United States does not create laws. Bush and Cheney tried that, and they did it with signing statements. But if you remember, this was worked out with industry and the Congress. So there's the first part of your argument is shot down. Secondly, how is what Obama is doing, how does that hurt? Who's it hurting? Come on, Ben, back up your argument. Who is it hurting?
It is hurting the United States.
No, don't do that, Ben. Don't make yourself look like an idiot and me look like a fool, all right? You can laugh as much as you want, but who is it hurting, and you said America. How? All right, I'll play your game. How?
Okay, how? This is how. Because the autos should fail. Chrysler should fail.
Get out of here. Jesus Christ. Where do these people come from? The autos should fail. Listen, learn how to put together a coherent sentence and then maybe call me back. All right? But, I mean, what snot dribbly nonsense is that? Barack Obama is... would that he were, you idiot! If he had a socialist bone in his body, he would get busy nationalizing certain aspects of this economy and turn the country into a democratic socialist country where jerks like you could get health care. Oh, I know. You don't need it because you pulled yourself up by your bootstraps, right? Oh, man, I get tired of that. Myla is calling from KTLK, listening in Corona, California. Myla?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. I'm just laughing my head off about that guy's comment about socialism. I just think a lot of people are upset. They're missing the big point. The American auto industry has failed to meet the needs of the people for the longest time. They should go out of business. That's what happens when you fail to produce a service or make a product that people want to buy. And for them to be like acting like Obama's, you know, Donald Trump telling the CEO of GM, you're fired, it's crap. It's crap. People are missing, like, you know, the big point. American auto industry hasn't kept up with new needs, and they're going out of business, period. End story.
Well, you know, if things were Myla, thank you. If things were really that simple, yeah. I mean, if this were a dry cleaning establishment, no offense to dry cleaners. If this were a small steel company, no offense to steel workers, that because of mismanagement, because of undercapitalization, like Nova M Radio, like Air America, like On Second Thought, companies that were mismanaged and or undercapitalized, and what happened to them? Down the commode. Fine. But we're talking about the American auto industry. And for anyone who does not, as one of our callers obviously didn't, understand the degree to which the auto industry is part of this country. Now, if you wanted to just let it fold up and fade away, it means one thing. You are a dumbass. That's what it means. I'm not referring to you, Myla, but the guy before you. That is crazy talk. It is crazy talk. So what do? You say, okay, we're going to give you a loan. We're going to help you out. Get your company in order. Get your management decisions rational. Produce a product that the American public will buy. Be responsible. We'll give you a chance. Now, how is that different? Really, when you get right down to it, different in form. How is it different in form from a lending institution saying to someone who is starting a business, okay, make the right kind of decisions, produce a product that people are going to like, run your company reasonably and rationally. Here's your loan. There is no difference. I get so sick of these lard-ass right-wingers in this country who, as soon as you talk about bailouts or about democratic socialism or about capitalism having run its course, they get all mouth-breathy and start talking about, oh, as if they understood anything about what they're talking about. It's just astonishing. You people listen to Glenn Beck way too much. You really do. There is no more of a dumbass in American media than Glenn Beck. Even more of a dumbass than Rush. At least Limbaugh, the Limbot, had the power and the authority to establish an entire new political party. At least Hannity has the sense to realize that he is and shall always be in Limbaugh's shadow. But Beck. Oh, my God. But I digress. Frank is calling from, he's driving in Illinois, listening on XM. Hey, Frank.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a pretty enthusiastic supporter of Obama, but there were a couple of things he said today, and I'd like to get your take on it, that kind of raised my eyebrows. The first thing was, as he was talking about, by his own words, how the UAW has pretty much bled a good amount already to get things rolling. Yet we're looking for more, but on the other hand, we want to talk about good-paying jobs and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Hey, let me put you on hold a second, Frank.
Sure.
I got to do a break here. We'll come back right after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Now you got to crawl.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
Past the hour. We're talking with Frank, who is listening on XM. Can you do it again, Frank? I lost my train of thought during the commercial break.
Like I said, I was listening to Obama today, and I'm a pretty big supporter of him, but there were two things he said today, or let's just say have been going on here for a while, winding up, is the one is, you know, he's talking about, you know, we've got to have good-paying jobs and good benefits and yada, yada, yada. But by his own admission, the UAW has already, you know, pretty much, you know, been thrown under the bus. You know, how are we? We're going to have good-paying jobs with good benefits, yet you guys got to give up more.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, you know, like, all right, the administration threw Red Ink Rick overboard, which deservedly so. I mean, he ran the company into the ground, and that's fine. But other than, like, the heads of Fannie and Freddie and AIG, where's all the you know, and they tried to get the bonuses back, but that's kind of foolish now. Where's all the conditions and strings and tossing people overboard on Wall Street and all these banks and stuff like that? I think we need to extract some conditions and, well, guarantees is a poor word, but some kind of conditions for them that we're just not pouring water down a hole. We want GM and Chrysler to jump through hoops, but it's like, yeah, sure, here, AIG, here's another $80 billion. What the heck?
Well, let me try to answer this on the air, okay? I appreciate what you had to say, Frank. A couple of things. First of all, I agree that the union workers in this country have taken enough of a beating. but we're in a situation here. The most unionized industry in America is the auto industry. And through good times, the UAW managed to get pretty decent contracts for their workers. The UAW has already given back an awful lot. They are at a two-tiered level now, where new hires going into these auto plants make about $19 an hour, I believe, instead of the industry average, which is about $30 an hour. And don't if you're a right winger, don't send me an email about no, they make $72 an hour. No, they don't. That's one of those cock and bull stories put together by right wing nutbags that control the airwaves. As far as the comparison between the auto industry and the financial services industry, I think in fact that the rule book is being rewritten. Where it concerns, say, the banking industry, that's the catch-all phrase that I use. And these new rules will pretty much attempt, you know, rules are only as good as the people enforcing them or supervising that everyone's playing by the rules. The new rules will eliminate the kind of situation that developed here over the past 25 years. It was not something that happened just with George W. Bush, although he was just gleefully involved in watching the whole goddamn economy blow up. It was mostly Bush's fault. It was partly Clinton's fault, partly George Herbert Walker Bush's fault. And, you know, the person who got the ball rolling, of course, was Ronald Reagan. So there's an awful lot of damage that's been done, and it's going to take immediate radical action, which is what I would suggest, you know, move certain industries into a democratic socialist move, or it's going to take some time. As far as the workers are concerned, you get no argument from me about kicking the workers' asses one more time. The UAW that has had more givebacks in the past five or six times they've negotiated a contract with the manufacturers, and they've had the takeaways. So it's again. I'm not saying I agree with Barack Obama's plans here, but I have to say it appears to me he's doing the best he can. So long as he doesn't, I mean, if he's not going to make the radical moves that this economy, obviously, the global economy, obviously needs. If he's not going to do that, if he's not going to move this country to a different economic model, which apparently he's not going to do, at least not now. If he's not going to do that, if he's going to go ahead with these stopgap measures, you know, the jerk that called in and said he's anti-capitalist, what Obama is doing is everything in his power, just like FDR did, to reanimate the corpse of capitalism, to breathe some kind of oxygen into its lungs. And the weird part is, like the jerk that first called me about this issue, you know, you people have listened so long to these right-wing dumbasses like Beck and Limbaugh and Hannity, you honestly believe that what he's doing is socialistic. And it's just, it's stunning. The depth of your ignorance, not you, Frank, the depth of the ignorance is just, I mean, it's breathtaking. Obama is trying to save capitalism, and I think, frankly, he's wasting his time. But that's just me. I'm a radio talk show host. I don't have ditto heads, and I damn sure don't tell you what to think.
Liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
It is almost 25 before the hour. Back to your phone calls here. Nora is calling from Minneapolis, listening on KTNF. Hey, Nora.
Hey, Tom. It is me. And, you know, I called to finish my thought.
Wait,
last time I forgot right in the middle of a sentence.
Hey, Nora, it's not Tom, it's Mike.
Excuse me.
That's all right.
Can you tell I would like to talk to Tom Hartman also?
Well, I
saw him on Larry King last night.
Did you really?
It looked like he was becoming revealed as an angelic being. To me, it looked like.
An angelic being?
An angelic being. Who? That's what he appeared to me as.
Tom Hartman?
Yeah.
What made him look angelic?
His manner and his consciousness, and
did he have like wings or a halo, or
no,
was he glowing?
It wasn't a physical appearance. It was his inner being being revealed to me.
Ah, oh, okay. Did Larry King pick up on this, or did he not?
No, I don't think so.
He missed it completely.
Arianna Huffington may have.
Oh, was she on there too?
She was on there, and he was on there agreeing with her. They had one of those four divided into four pictures of four people.
Oh, yeah?
On the Larry King, you know? Anyway, the main topic that I was calling in about...
Right. Yeah, I'm sorry. We got off on Hartman there for a minute.
Yeah, right.
He's a nice man. Why don't you...
off again today flying.
Hey, why don't you call him tomorrow and talk to him and tell him that you picked up on his angelic nature?
It would probably embarrass him.
No, no. He'd love it. Trust me.
Okay. Okay, well.
All right. Now, where were we? What you really called about was,
I was talking about in defense of Geithner.
Uh-huh.
And because I have been, in the last 6 months, really studying up all these experts, I'm a full-time news junkie, and they've had all these financial, you know, professors of economics, et cetera, on all the shows. And
mm-hmm.
One of the ideas that I picked up on from them was this. Most of the people have no clue, do not know how bad the financial meltdown worldwide is, and most of them have no clue how bad it is going to become. And that was came out a couple of months ago, and now there's a question of whether it's improving or not. But Barack Obama does still keep saying it's first going to keep getting worse. But just along those lines, sometimes the people that attack Geithner and what he's doing,
mm-hmm.
I just, it just seems like a lot of times out of ignorance or not being able to understand how deep his mind is into it.
Well, I would tend to tend to agree with that, Nora. As long as they are going to try desperately to save the very foundation of capitalism, which is the flow of money, usually in the form of loans, as long as they are going to and the interest collected on those loans, if they are going to attempt to save the essential nature of capitalism, then they are probably doing the right thing. The problem is, the part I don't understand is capitalism is dead as an unbridled, unregulated form of economic policy. It is dead, and I think it is way, way too late, since we're dealing with a corpse, to say, well, we're going to put in place new rules that will take effect as soon as we can get this damn dead body to stand up and stop stinking and start talking and walking again. It's not going to happen. But based on what the Obama administration financial people believe, yeah, they're doing all the right things. You're absolutely right.
Well, my idea, and maybe they're going towards my idea, and this is it, a hybrid economy of partial capitalism and a big, huge other part of socialism of all the needs, such as, you know,
well, that's kind of, that's kind of what democratic socialism is. And in order for that to occur, Nora, the capitalism itself has to be shoveled into a hole where the maggots can finish the job and be done with it. But I you know, I completely agree with that. Nora, I got to move on. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Michael is calling from the Bronx, listening on the Internet. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Mike. How
yes?
you been?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Chilling, literally. But, you know, I am with you 100%. I am so sick and doggone tired of these right-wingers. They're becoming a pain in my ass. They're worse than constipation. I'm sick of their rhetoric.
Michael, way too much information there.
Well,
come on, man.
Yeah,
come on,
I'm
man.
Just, I didn't mean to put it like that. I'm just saying how angry they're really making me with this obstructionism. They're giving Obama a hard time. They don't know that as much as they obstruct Obama's trying to reform this nation, the more they hurt the people of this nation.
Uh-huh.
I mean, from Rush Limbaugh to Dick Cheney, I mean, before you know it, somebody might want to turn around and throw a shoe at them, you know, but only this time there'd be, you know, like a direct hit. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what else to say. I don't know what else to say about these people. And can I also give you a prediction about Bernie Madoff? His appeal is still pending, is it not?
I think it is, yes.
Yeah? Well, my prediction is, oh, man, I'm having problems here. My prediction is that the judge would turn around and say to him, your request is denied.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Michael. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. Now, what game show is that from?
I'm just glad he didn't flush the toilet.
I'm glad he didn't, too.
After all that other chatter.
877-99-MALLOY. We got two open lines here. If you want to get it said, come on. Bring it on. Karen is calling from Olympia, Washington, listening online. Hey, Karen.
Hi, Mike. I can't believe I got on.
Well, here you are.
I love you, baby. Well, I love Kathy. I love Molly. I love going on the cruise with you.
Well, great. Well, you were on that. You were on that cruise. That was like a lifetime ago, wasn't it?
Oh my God, it was. then we went to the recession.
Yeah, head first.
Listen, we after paying our property taxes, we are going to support you monetarily, but we're listening on your live your free stream.
Well, you got to get the property taxes paid, or you won't have a.
You won't
have a place to sit down and listen. So get the taxes paid and then sign up. All right.
Yes, we are going to.
Okay.
We did Nova.
Yeah. Well.
Anyway, I wanted to tell you that I used to work for the state, and I was a big pusher of Deming. I can't remember his first name, Robert,
yeah.
It's quality assurance.
Yeah.
What that means is the employees who do the job should be at the table to refine and be efficient. It's called efficient experts.
Uh-huh.
It's the employees, not the CEOs. They aren't down there.
Right, right.
You know, doing the job and finding out how you can make it more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And not allowed to, you know, be at the table.
That's what union shop stewards are supposed to do. Part of their job is to make sure. I mean, there's not a union member on earth who wants to so gut the company he's working for that it can no longer employ him or her.
Right.
And this is where you're
doing something that's not efficient, and they know how to make it more efficient.
Right.
But they're not allowed to talk.
Well, okay. Yeah, they're not allowed to talk because if they do, they're going to be considered to be insubordinate or they're going to get fired. Okay. That's another thing that unions do. Unions prevent that from happening. If a worker wants to speak out, there's a certain avenues through which he can get his opinion heard. And eventually, perhaps, maybe it works its way all the way up to the bosses. But without a union there, if a worker
work its way up.
No matter what the worker says, he's going to be shushed up, and if he continues to talk, then he'll be fired. So
right on.
All right, well, listen, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, Karen. Take care. Jay is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic 92.1. Hey, Jay.
How you doing tonight, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
I can't complain.
Good.
A couple of things. First, you were talking about Harmy Karzai in great old Afghanistan.
Right.
Prior to 9/11, I don't know how many people are aware of Dick Cheney's involvement with great company Unocal and their desire to build a pipeline through Afghanistan.
Yeah, now, you know, we've talked about this half a dozen times, the most recent time tonight on this program.
Okay. Well, have people talked about Harmy Karzai's involvement with...
Yes. We've talked about it many times. I talked about it tonight. He used to be a lobbyist for Unocal. He sat in on the meeting where the Taliban was brought to Houston back in the late 90s, and the Taliban refused to go along with the pipeline building. So, yeah, we pretty much covered it. And I think more and more people should know about that, Jay, and I appreciate you checking in, pal. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
up the drain. I don't think that's right.
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to Kathy Bay, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Bruce Enberg, who all contributed a bit to the program, some bigger bits than others. Got to share this with you. This is from Mary, who writes, "Hey, Mike, you're right about Obama and what he's been positioned to do, try to save capitalism. Obama is definitely not a socialist. He's a corporate shill who's trying to save capitalism for the capitalists. If he were really a socialist, he would nationalize the auto industry and allow the workers to democratically run it with democratic input from other parts of society. Why did he and Congress force the auto workers to take concessions and not the CEOs at AIG?" The following is a letter from a United Auto Worker who is a real socialist. Now, this is what I got to share this with you. This is from Kate Hammer, UAW Local 879 member. She writes, and she wrote this on the 21st. Today is, what, the 30th? She writes, "This past week, Ford workers conceded yet again to the demands of the company, Washington, and the UAW misleadership. The breach of contract includes a decrease in pay, shorter breaks, no paid leave, and forfeiting the Christmas bonus, just to name a few. We were told that we had to make these concessions in order to save our jobs and to qualify for emergency loans. Government policy was to open up our contract to attack our living standards. Now, at the same time, taxpayer bailed out AIG is giving away $165 million in so-called contractually obligated bonuses." Tony Roden of the Express Times newspaper described this hypocrisy this way, quote, "Hey, a contract is a contract. Oh, that's right. We ordered the auto companies to renegotiate their deals. We just forgot to apply the same standards to Wall Street. Oops." End quote. Well, Ford auto workers, who in an entire year make a fraction of what the AIG bonuses are, were put under massive pressure to make concessions. The AIG bonus boys are simply encouraged to give back their bonuses. The bonuses range from a grand to in the millions. The New York Times reports that seven executives at the Financial Products Unit were entitled to receive more than $3 million in bonuses. So in return for nearly bankrupting the Republic, when their paper transactions make fortunes, they keep their fortunes. When their paper transactions lose money, they keep their fortunes and expect the heartland to pay the cost. AIG is demeaning the value of those who make real things through hard work in the heartland of America, while proclaiming the value of those who barter paper money of decreasing value in manipulated markets. They then expect the rest of us to pay the price of their failure. We are deemed, Kate writes, overcompensated for our labor, and consequently our rightfully earned wages and benefits are repealed. Now, as tax dollars go toward bailing out the greedy financial crooks who are responsible for the failing economy, the administration stands with their hand tied behind their backs. It's a contract, they say. Nothing can be done. Where exactly does the government stand in regard to the rights of working class America, the true producers of wealth? Kate Hammer, member of United Auto Workers Local 879. Yeah, it should not come as a surprise to anyone that when I say it should not come as a surprise to anyone, I'm leaving out the moon bats on the right in this country. They couldn't find their ass with both hands. Forget them. They've done enough damage. But who could possibly, in the Democratic Party, believe ever that Barack Obama was a lefty or a socialist or any of the stuff that that crazy hoe from Wasilla tried to lay on him during the final stages of last year's campaign? Barack Obama is as much of a capitalist as, oh, I don't know, pick a name, E.I. DuPont, Henry Ford, John D. Rockefeller. Come on. Come on. Now, he may be a capitalist with a conscience. Let's give him that. I mean, he certainly is not like this moron that preceded him in the Oval Office. He's not like the Slick Willie. I mean, I think Barack Obama, in the world of capitalism, would probably be a pretty good capitalist. He holds to the same basic tenets that say there has to be a huge pool of underemployed workers, so that immediately casts him in an ugly light as far as I'm concerned. But he's a capitalist, for God's sake. You know, why do scorpions sting? Why do capitalists do what they do? It's their nature. What Barack Obama is trying to do right now is saving the country is secondary. The primary objective of the Obama administration is to save capitalism, the same as FDR's prime directive, save capitalism. But you see, 80 years ago, when FDR did save capitalism, or 75 years ago, he really didn't. How do you know? Take a look. I mean, here we are. Crash, burn, flames, thud, bang, boom. So if the Obama administration insists on trying to breathe new life into this dying economic system, I mean, who's to tell them not to? They're in power, right? But in the meantime, the dumbasses on the right in this country insist that he's a socialist, or a Marxist, which is just breathtakingly stupid to me. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for participating. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.